Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Sasha Meinrath, who is the director of the New America Foundation's Open Technology Institute and has been described as a community interest pioneer and an entrepreneurial visionary. He's the co-founder of Measurement Lab, a distribution platform for researchers around the world to deploy internet measurement tools, advance network research, and empower the public with useful information about their broadband connections. In addition, he coordinates the Open Source Wireless Coalition, a global partnership dedicated to the development of open source, low-cost wireless technologies. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sasha Meinrath.
Thank you very much.
And the House last week passed the CISPA bill, the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, and it's now before the Senate. There's some expectation on the part of the House that the president will sign it. He's issued an earlier veto threat. There's a Senate bill by Joseph Lieberman and Susan Collins that seems to have some legs. It put the jurisdiction side of Department of Homeland Security. What's your sense of this? Because there's a little bit of an alarm. There's been some alarm from the internet community, somewhat similar to the concerns about SOPA that happened previously. How bad is this CISPA?
Yeah, this bill is tremendously bad in that it enables, it empowers government and private industry to swap information in an extra-legal manner to, in essence, invade the privacy of users of popular online services and applications. And that, for that reason alone, it's absolutely worth fighting against. The good news is that the White House has said that it is going to threaten or veto this bill, and that threat makes it more than likely that this bill is dead on arrival as soon as it gets to the Senate.
So what would the Senate bill then do? What could the Senate bill do to get the White House signature? What changes would be made? And what do you know about the Lieberman-Collins bill?
Right. So the key elements that have to be in any sort of bill are ones that put privacy safeguards and judicial review back into this space. Right now, what you in essence have are sort of the National Security Agency, the NSA, and law enforcement agencies being able to directly talk to private industry groups and then get access to, let's say, your Gmail account or your Facebook account without any court review of that process. And of course, in a society that abides by rule of law, this kind of extra legal maneuver is really anathema to our democracy. Now, if, and this is a big if, the bills that are being proposed put that kind of judicial review back in, there's a long chance that you might be able to get the White House back on board for this. But I very much doubt that. It would certainly need a lot of dramatic changes. And that would then put this bill into something called reconciliation, where the Senate version and the House version of the bills need to be brought to a small committee made up of members from both chambers, who would then have to agree on the final text of this bill.
Well, Sasha Meinrath, the House bill that sounds alarming from what you've told us was voted 248 to 168, with 42 Democrats joining 206 Republicans. How did they convince themselves that it was okay in the name of protecting the internet and bolstering cybersecurity to put corporate America in bed with the government and share the information with the National Security Agency with no privacy rights to American citizens? How did they make that leap?
Yeah, I think most of them make the leap because they don't know what's in the bill or what its impacts are. I mean, people generally admitted this over the SOPA debate, where they said, we don't know what's in this bill. We didn't realize the implications for what we were passing. And the reason why over SOPA PIPA, you had everyone from human rights groups, public interest organizations, to high-tech firms all coming out against this bill, was because we understand what the implications are. And the same problem exists for CISPA. You know, having read the text, I'm like, wow, this would really have incredibly bad implications for any kind of open service. It would have hugely detrimental implications for the online activities that we partake in every day. And because of that, because it seems that people don't understand the implications of the bills that they're passing, I think this adds to a series of decisions. This isn't a one-off. It's a series of decisions that are being made by Congress that don't really effectively protect us online and certainly undermine our Fourth Amendment rights and, quite honestly, our First Amendment free speech rights online.
Again, I'm speaking with Sacha Monrath, who is the director of the New America Foundation's Open Technology Institute, and he's also coordinates the Open Source Wireless Coalition, a global partnership dedicated to the development of open source, low-cost wireless technologies. So you're in the business of trying to make the internet and information in general more accessible to more people at a lower cost, right?
Correct.
And this Online Piracy Act, CISPA, that's now been passed by the House, gone to the Senate, and the president may or may not veto it. It appears to do the opposite, which is to corporatize control over, in the name of security, basically. It's an open season, isn't it? I mean, there's no restraints on the on corporations and the national security agencies. Under this rubric, can't they investigate anything? I mean,
this bill allows, in essence, unilateral actions by law enforcement agencies without review, and in fact also includes provisions that gag people from being able to talk about when these issues happen. So I view it as like a good rule of thumb, is if this bill, you know, take the text of this bill and put it in the context of, say, an Iran or a Syria or North Korea or China, and if the bill text was the same, would it be a good idea or a bad idea for these countries to pass exactly the same language? And I think in that context, we would say, look, any bill that these governments pass that would allow them to circumvent any sort of transparency, would gag people from even talking about the nefariousness when it does exist, that does this behind closed doors, and directly, the purpose of this is to directly infringe upon the privacy rights of its citizenry, I think we would agree, on the left, the right, doesn't matter, we would agree this is a bad idea. And so in the United States, what we have is a bill that is pending that has really bad repercussions for our rights. And this is why you have a lot of folks, left and right, who have been fighting against this bill. I expect that, and I think one of the reasons why we've seen a rather unprecedented action by the White House to actually weigh in on a communications bill and threaten the veto. I think the reason for that is because people have begun to realize the implications of this are so detrimental. Not only do they undermine our rights locally, but they really undermine our foreign policy internationally, because the text of the bill is one that I'm certain that the rulers and authoritarian dictators of other countries would love to mirror in their own country.
Well, but somewhere in this, isn't there the intention, Sacha Monrath, to protect the internet not just against sort of anarchists and hackers, but against the kind of cyber threats which appear to be coming from China? Isn't
absolutely. I'm not saying that the intentions are not good. I think we would all agree that the intention to protect innocents from the malfeasance of ne'er-do-wells is certainly well worth doing. The problem is that we have a technological reality that doesn't map onto what this legislation does, that the bad guys aren't sitting there on Gmail doing stuff in plain text. They're encrypting their email. They're doing things that are far more sophisticated than what this bill would enable law enforcement to counter. What this bill does is it sets up a surveillance regime not for the bad guys. It sets up a surveillance regime that casts a huge net over every John and Jane Doe in an attempt to, with that huge net, maybe get a couple of bad guys. But in the interim, what you do get is a tremendous number of false positives, a tremendous number of completely innocent people that get caught up in that surveillance net and have their lives destroyed because of it.
So do you think, Sacha Monrath, that there's going to be, you mentioned earlier, similarities with this CISPA bill, the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, and SOPA, the Stop Online Piracy Act, that was heavily pushed here in Hollywood by the studios. Again, there is a real problem of piracy. Nobody should deny that reality. But it really alarmed a lot of people in terms of internet freedom. And eventually, there was quite a backlash with Wikipedia going dark for a day and Google with a black banner, and it really did turn things around. Everybody thought that because the former senator from Connecticut, Chris Dodd, was pushing it with his colleagues, it was a slam dunk. But then it became quite a surprise that so much of a backlash was generated. Is there going to be a similar backlash, do you think, now that this bill's passed the House, in the Senate, and somewhere on its way, presumably, to the president?
Yes. So if this bill gains momentum in the Senate, I would expect at least as large a backlash. And I think it will be probably even angrier than what we'd seen before, because people feel that we already weighed in once. We already petitioned. 15 million people petitioned Congress in a 24-hour period. That may, in fact, be completely unprecedented. And yet here we are fighting the exact same battle that we did just a month or two ago. And I think people are fairly fed up. We already said once, this is a horrible idea. Go back to the drawing board, bring us something meaningfully different. And instead, CISPA is really sort of the same MO, rewarmed. And it's just as bad the second time around as it was the first time around. So amongst my contacts, amongst the people that are in this space and have been for years, what we see is the same kind of people organizing and getting energized and getting ready to launch a second huge backlash against a bill that is perceived to be of the same ilk that SOPA and PIPA came out of.
So what explains why these bad bills are launched in the name of dealing with serious problems like piracy and protection of intellectual property and cybersecurity? I mean, who's writing them with this mendacious attempt? I can excuse the Congress because, one, they're corrupt. That's just a given. But two, they're not so bright. But, you know, who's pushing this stuff?
So I suspect that a lot of this came out of the back rooms of, you know, the RIAA and MPAA, the large copyright holder groups that for the movie industry and the movie and music industries. That's where SOPA and PIPA came out of. It's quite likely that their lobbyists helped draft a substantial portion of the actual language of that bill.
You mean they're trying to have another bite at the apple via this cybersecurity bill? Is that what you're arguing?
That's right. There's in some ways an alliance that's been made between law enforcement on the one hand and copyright holders on the other, that this kind of enormously invasive surveillance regime benefits both sectors. It helps copyright holders and it helps law enforcement. But unfortunately, it also undermines our fundamental human rights. It undermines our constitutionally guaranteed rights. And so this is why you have people on the left and the right fighting against these kinds of bills. The unfortunate reality is now, SOPA PIPA was sort of the forefront. The vanguard on that was the copyright industry, and CISPA is sort of the same bill, but the forefront on this one is law enforcement. But the alliance, the lobbying sector that is aligned to try to push these bills is one and the same for both.
So who's fighting against it? You say the White House has threatened a veto, and presumably the White House, in order to avoid a White House veto, there'll be some compromises made. Is there anything that's in the works that give you, Sasha Meinrath, any comfort that these civil liberties attacks that you feel are inherent in this bill are going to be, you know, mitigated and either eliminated or made acceptable to civil libertarians?
Yeah, I mean, my hope is that what you end up with is this bill never coming to vote, that people understand, senators understand that to do so would really invite a backlash by their constituencies on both the left and the right. That would be pretty substantial. I mean, all indicators are that people are really fired up and they're willing to battle on these issues. If it does come to a vote, what we would see, again, is sort of a SOPA PIPA-esque backlash, both against those that voted for it, and, of course, in an election year, that looms large in a lot of people's decision-making, but also pressuring of the White House directly to veto the bill, as they have threatened to do.
Well, of course, John Boehner is accusing the White House of threatening to veto the bill, not because the White House is interested in big government, and that the House is, has this wonderful partnership between government and private corporations in this CISPA bill.
Yeah, that, to me, that's phenomenally bizarre. Of a bill that would increase the government is being then for not passing it. The White House is being accused of trying to be for big government. Clearly, this is a bill that, if passed, would require far more government invasiveness. And by vetoing it, you would lessen government intrusion into our lives. I'm not sure what's driving that sort of assessment. It doesn't map onto the actual reality of what's happening here.
Well, he says, Boehner says the White House are in a camp all by themselves. So what do you know, Sasha Meinrath, that's informed the White House to take this stand from day one? Because they threatened the House bill from day one, and of course the House went ahead and ignored them, and now they've got the bill before the Senate. You know, frankly, I haven't heard too much in the media, have you, about the kind of conversation we're having?
Yeah, this bill has been fairly quiet thus far in a lot of the media. That is not the case in the blogosphere, and certainly definitely not the case amongst civil liberties groups. And so, you know, in many ways, we're waiting to see what happens next. You know, we don't want to jump into the middle of a fray if we don't have to. We have limited time and limited resources. And so this bill is on its way to dying on its own, which it does appear to be. There's no reason to then kick it to the curb. On the other hand, if it does gain momentum, if it does look like it's going to pass, or even if it does pass, one would expect to see substantial outrage and the kind of SOPA PIPA-esque coverage that's sort of like this horse race and a big, you know, almost carnival-esque kind of coverage. But the reality is what's driving the concern over this bill really boils down very simply to wanting to ensure that whether you are online or offline, that the same kind of judicial review and rule of law exists for your communications and your information. And really fundamentally what this breaks down to is there's a group of congressional members that want to take the same protections that we have in our offline life and eliminate them for our online life.
Well, just in closing then, Sasha Meinrath, I take it this all stems from 9/11, right? The post-9/11 thinking. Mental environment, for the want of a better description, that has produced this bill.
Yes. And it comes out of the same sort of lack of due diligence, right? The Patriot Act passed instantaneously, a 900-page bill passed in the dark of night. Almost zero people would have had the ability to read it that fast if they were speed readers. And to me, that same kind of lack of due diligence, the same kind of lack of actual democratic deliberation, of discussion over these kinds of bills, is always going to be a danger to our civil rights. And so there are always going to be people that will take advantage of these opportunities. I'm certain that if they could, there's a number of lobbies that would push this through next time we have a major terrorist attack in the name of security. But in the end, what it does is it actually undermines our security. And it does so because people then circumvent these kinds of surveillance mechanisms, and because, quite honestly, a lot of the bad guys have already moved on to technological solutions that this bill will do little to nothing to solve.
But it sounds like it's in the kind of milieu of the old Cold War joke of Mort Sahls: the Russians arrest an American for spying, and the Americans retaliate by arresting an American for spying. The idea that Bin Laden is laughing, not that he's alive, but you know, the idea that every time we take our shoes off, he's laughing at the airport. In other words, we punish ourselves. I don't see anything in this bill that's going to stop the Chinese spy agencies from cyber attacks, is there?
No, I think that's exactly right. You've put your finger on it. This is a bill not focused on preventing what it claims to be focused on preventing. It's a bill focused on surveilling everyday Americans writ large and all of the social media and all of the private emails that we send every day. In essence, it comes from a mindset that thinks that if we just get more data into law enforcement's hands, that we can somehow stop the next terrorist attack.
Well, Sacha Manrath, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Sacha Manrath, who is the director of the New America Foundation's Open Technology Institute. He's been described as a community internet pioneer and an entrepreneurial visionary. He's the co-founder of Measurement Lab, a distribution platform for researchers around the world to deploy internet measurement tools, advance network research, and empower the public with useful information about their broadband connections. In addition, he coordinates the Open Source Wireless Coalition, a global partnership dedicated to the development of open source, low-cost wireless technologies. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graeme Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. One time, one time.